Lecture 26, The Diplomatic Front.
We turn away from the battlefield with this lecture, moving to look at the world of Civil War diplomacy. As I've said before, both sides knew that foreign policy might prove crucial in deciding the outcome of the war. From the very beginning, there had been a great sensitivity, both in Washington and in Richmond, to the fact that Great Britain or France, among the European powers, might be able to perform as a crucial actor in our American drama. And they had, of course, in mind the example of the American Revolution. Everyone remembered that. We've mentioned it several times in class, but the French stepping in after Saratoga, sending not only money, but also troops and a fleet, had been absolutely essential to the success of the colonies against the British Empire. The Confederacy bent every diplomatic effort to secure recognition from Britain and France, as well as other powers, but the key powers were Britain and France, and they hoped also to get, in their wildest dreams, I suppose you could say, military and financial aid as well, not just formal recognition, but formal recognition was the first thing they wanted, while the North sought to prevent recognition. What we'll do in this lecture is look first at the Confederacy's King Cotton diplomacy, as it was called, then we'll look at the Northern blockade as a source of tension between the United States and Great Britain, the Trent Affair of 1861, which threatened to disrupt relations between the United States and Great Britain, the diplomatic crisis for the North in the summer and autumn of 1862, which was brought on by Robert E. Lee's victories at the Seven Days and Second Manassas. We'll then move to the crisis between the United States and Britain over the Laird Rams in the summer of 1863, and we will finish with a look at French intervention in Mexico under Napoleon III that threatened to disrupt relations with the United States as well. So those will be our topics. And here we go. As we judged strengths and weaknesses earlier in the course and tallied the North had these advantages and the Confederacy had these advantages, we left as a wild card the potential for European intervention in the war. Intervention of some kind, recognition, or perhaps even more than that. And as I said just a minute ago, most of the diplomatic efforts of the Confederacy were directed toward achieving that recognition, the North trying to counter them. In the end, the North prevailed in the diplomatic arena, and it did so for several reasons. It had very skillful diplomats, and I would single out Charles Francis Adams, who was the United States minister to the court of St. James. The anti-slavery sentiments of most Europeans also would be very important in the course of the diplomatic struggles. Fears on the part of Britain and France of the economic and military consequences of a conflict with the United States also loomed large. They did not want to alienate the United States, which was a world power. But I think the most important factor in the end was that the Confederacy did not win enough consecutive victories on the battlefield to persuade observers in London and Paris that the South was going to be able to sustain its independence. They didn't want to back a loser, in other words. They came close, as we'll see, I think one time, to believing the Confederacy actually was going to win its war on the battlefield, but in the end they backed away. Let's begin by looking at King Cotton diplomacy. The South went into the war believing that its cotton was absolutely necessary to the British economy. The Confederacy knew, Confederate leaders knew, that 80% of England's cotton came from the South. They knew that England manufactured about $600 million worth of goods from that southern cotton each year, an enormous amount of money. If we made the conversion to modern dollars, it would be a staggering sum of money. That wasn't a question that the Confederates had only an indifferent grasp of. They knew the degree to which Great Britain was dependent on their cotton, and they believed that if that supply were denied to Great Britain, that the British economy, this big portion of which was tied up with the textile industry, would be disrupted. Workers would be thrown out of their jobs. Starvation might even set in, and there would be such pressure, such a groundswell of pressure on the British government to get that cotton flowing freely to England again,